stupid people buy them. The consequences of such destructive policies have been stark, including lower economic growth, lower standards of living, lower birth rates, more socially disruptive migration, more vulnerability to hostile foreign adversaries, and much, much smaller militaries. The United States cares greatly about the people of Europe. We really do. I mean, look, I am derived from Europe. Scotland and Germany, 100% Scotland, my mother, 100% German, my father. And we believe deeply in the bonds we share with Europe as a civilization. I want to see it do great. That's why issues like energy, trade, immigration, and economic growth must be central concerns to anyone who wants to see a strong and united West. Because Europe and those countries have to do their thing. They have to get out of the culture that they've created over the last 10 years. It's horrible what they're doing to themselves. They're destroying themselves. It's beautiful, beautiful places. We want strong allies, not seriously weakened ones. We want Europe to be strong. Ultimately, these are matters of national security, and perhaps no current issue makes the situation more clear than what's currently going on with Greenland. Would you like me to say a few words of Greenland? I was going to leave it out of the speech, but I think I would have been reviewed very negatively. I have tremendous respect for both the people of Greenland and the people of Denmark. Tremendous respect. But every NATO ally has an obligation to be able to defend their own territory. And the fact is, no nation or group of nations is in any position to be able to secure Greenland other than the United States. We're a great power, much greater than people even understand. I think they found that out 2 weeks ago in Venezuela. We saw this in World War II, when Denmark fell to Germany after just 6 hours of fighting and was totally unable to defend either itself or Greenland. So the United States was then compelled. We did it. We felt an obligation to do it, to send our own forces to hold the Greenland territory. And hold it we did, at great cost and expense. They didn't have a chance of getting on it, and they tried. Denmark knows that. We literally set up bases on Greenland for Denmark. We fought for Denmark. We weren't fighting for anyone else. We were fighting to save it for Denmark. Big, beautiful piece of ice. It's hard to call it land. It's a big piece of ice. But we saved Greenland and successfully prevented our enemies from gaining a foothold in our hemisphere. So we did it for ourselves also. And then after the war, which we won it big. Without us, right now you'd all be speaking German and a little Japanese, perhaps. After the war, we gave Greenland back to Denmark. How stupid were we to do that? But we did it. But we gave it back. But how ungrateful are they now? So now our country and the world face much greater risks than it did ever before because of missiles, because of nuclear, because of weapons of warfare that I can't even talk about. 2 weeks ago, they saw weapons that nobody ever heard of. They weren't able to fire one shot at us. They said, what happened? Everything was discombobulated. They said, we've got them in our sights. Press the trigger, and nothing happened. No anti-aircraft missiles went up. There was one that went up about 30 feet and crashed down right next to the people that sent it. They said, what the hell is going on? Those defensive systems were made by Russia and by China. So they're going to go back to the drawing boards, I guess. Greenland is a vast, almost entirely uninhabited and undeveloped territory, sitting undefended in a key strategic location between the United States, Russia, and China. That's exactly where it is, right smack in the middle. wasn't important nearly when we gave it back. You know, when we gave it back, it wasn't the same as it is now. It's not important for any other reason, you know, to everyone talks about the minerals. There's so many places. There's no rare earth. No such thing as rare earth. There's rare processing. But there's so much rare earth. And this, to get to this rare earth, you got to go through hundreds of feet of ice. That's not the reason we need it. We need it for strategic national security and international security. This enormous unsecured island is actually part of North America, on the northern frontier of the Western Hemisphere. That's our territory. It is therefore a core national security interest of the United States of America. And in fact, it's been our policy for hundreds of years to prevent outside threats from entering our hemisphere. And we've done it very successfully. We've never been stronger than we are now. That's why American presidents have sought to purchase Greenland for nearly two centuries. You know, for two centuries, they've been trying to do it. They should have kept it after World War II, but they had a different president. That's all right. People think differently. Much more necessary now than it was at that time, however. In 2019, Denmark said that they would spend over $200 million to strengthen Greenland's defenses. But as you know, they spent less than 1% of that amount. 1%, there's no sign of Denmark there. And I say that with great respect for Denmark, whose people I love, whose leaders are very good. It's the United States alone that can protect this giant mass of land, this giant piece of ice, develop it and improve it and make it so that it's good for Europe and safe for Europe and good for us. And that's the reason I'm seeking immediate negotiations to once again discuss the acquisition of Greenland by the United States, just as we have acquired many other territories throughout our history, as many of the European nations have. They've acquired, there's nothing wrong with it. Many of them, some went in reverse, actually, if you look. Some had great vast wealth, great vast lands all over the world. They went in reverse. They're stuck back where they started. That happens too, but some grow. But this would not be a threat to NATO. This would greatly enhance the security of the entire alliance, the NATO alliance. The United States is treated very unfairly by NATO. I want to tell you that. And when you think about it, nobody can dispute it. We give so much and we get so little in return. And I've been a critic of NATO for many years. And yet I've done more to help NATO than any other president by far, than any other person. You wouldn't have NATO if I didn't get involved in my first term. The war with Ukraine is an example. We are thousands of miles away, separated by a giant ocean. It's a war that should have never started, and it wouldn't have started if the 2020 U.S. presidential election weren't rigged. It was a rigged election. Everybody now knows that. They found out. People will soon be prosecuted for what they did. It's probably breaking news, but it should be. It was a rigged election. Can't have rigged elections. You need strong borders, strong elections, and ideally a good press. I always say it. Strong borders, strong elections, free, fair elections, and a fair media. The media is terrible. It's very crooked. It's very biased, terrible. But someday it'll straighten out because it's losing all credibility. Think of it. When I went in a landslide, a giant landslide, won all seven swing states, won the popular vote, won everything, and I only get negative press. That means that it has no credibility. And if they're going to get credibility, they're going to have to be fair. So you need a fair press. But you also need those other elements. And I inherited a terrible, terrible situation. If you look, the border was open. The inflation was raging. Everything was bad with the United States when I came into office. But I also inherited a mess with Ukraine and Russia, something that would have never happened. And I know Putin very well. He and I would discuss Ukraine. It was the apple of his eye, but he wasn't going to do anything. I said, Vladimir, you're not doing it. He would never have done it. It was terrible what happened. I could see it happening, too. After I left, I could see it happening. Biden had given Ukraine and NATO $350 billion, a staggering sum, $350 billion. I came in and just like the southern border, just like inflation, just like our economy, I said, wow, this place is in trouble, meaning our country. All of these things were out of control. But the border was out of control. We fixed it with the strongest border anywhere in the world. And I've now been working on this war for 1 year, during which time I settled 8 other wars, India, Pakistan. I settled other wars that were Vladimir Putin called me, Armenia, Azerbaijan. He said, I can't believe you settled that one. They were going on for 35 years. I settled it in 1 day. And President Putin called me. He said, you know, I can't believe I've worked on that war for 10 years trying to settle it. I couldn't do it. I said, do me a favor. Focus on settling your war. Don't worry about that one. What does the United States get out of all of this work, all of this money, other than death, destruction, and massive amounts of cash going to people who don't appreciate what we do? They don't appreciate what we do. I'm talking about NATO. I'm talking about Europe. They have to work on Ukraine. We don't. The United States is very far away. We have a big, beautiful ocean separating us. We have nothing to do with it. Until I came along, NATO was only supposed to pay 2% of GDP. But they weren't paying. Most of the countries weren't paying anything. The United States was paying for virtually 100% of NATO. And I got that stopped. I said, that's not fair. But then more importantly, I got NATO to pay 5%, and now they were paying, and now they are paying. So something nobody said was possible. They said, we will never go up higher than 2%. But they went to 5%, and now they're paying the 5%. They didn't pay the 2%, and now they're paying the 5%. And they're stronger for it, and they have an excellent, by the way, Secretary General, who's possibly in the room. Mark, are you here? Yes, he's here. Hello, Mark. We never asked for anything, and we never got anything. We probably won't get anything unless I decide to use excessive strength and force where we would be, frankly, unstoppable. But I won't do that. Okay? Now everyone's saying, oh, good. That's probably the biggest statement I made, because people thought I would use force. I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland, where we already had it, as a trustee, but respectfully returned it back to Denmark not long ago after we defeated the Germans, the Japanese, the Italians, and others in World War II. We gave it back to them. We were a powerful force then, but we are a much more powerful force now, after I rebuilt the military in my first term and continue to do so today. We have a budget of $1.5 trillion. We're bringing back battleships. The battleship is 100 times more powerful than the great battleships you saw in World War II, those great, big, gorgeous ships, the Missouri, the Iowa, the Alabama. Because I thought maybe we could take them out of mothballs. They said, no, sir, these ships are 100, think of that, 100 times more powerful than those big, big, magnificent pieces of art that you saw so many times ago that you still see on television. You say, wow, what a force. 100 times, each ship, 100 times more powerful than the big battleships of the past. So that was the end of the mothball story. So what we have gotten out of NATO is nothing except to protect Europe from the Soviet Union and now Russia. I mean, we've helped them for so many years. We've never gotten anything except we pay for NATO. And we paid for many years until I came along. We paid for, in my opinion, 100% of NATO because they weren't paying their bills. And all we're asking for is to get Greenland, including right title and ownership, because you need the ownership to defend it. You can't defend it on a lease. Number one, legally it's not defensible that way, totally. And number two, psychologically, who the hell wants to defend a license agreement or a lease, which is a large piece of ice in the middle of the ocean where, if there is a war, much of the action will take place on that piece of ice. Think of it. Those missiles would be flying right over the center of that piece of ice. All we want from Denmark for national and international security and to keep our very energetic and dangerous potential enemies at bay is this land on which we're going to build the greatest golden dome ever built. We're building a golden dome that's going to, just by its very nature, going to be defending Canada. Canada gets a lot of freebies from us, by the way. They should be grateful also, but they're not. I watched your prime minister yesterday. He wasn't so grateful. But they should be grateful to us. Canada lives because of the United States. Remember that, Mark, the next time you make your statements. What we did for Israel was amazing, but that's nothing compared to what we have planned for the United States, Canada, and the rest of the world. We are going to build a dome like no other. We did it. We did it for Israel. And by the way, I told Bibi, stop taking credit for the dome. That's our technology. That's our stuff. But they had a lot of courage and they were good fighters and they did a good job. And we wiped out the Iran nuclear threat like nobody can believe. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. That, Venezuela, taking down Soleimani, wiping out al-Baghdadi when he tried to reinstitute ISIS. We did a lot. I did a lot of big things, all perfectly executed. Everyone was perfectly executed. Somebody told me that, a military expert told me, sir, everything you've done has been perfectly executed. I said, I know. So other presidents have spent, whether foolishly or not, trillions and trillions of dollars on NATO and gotten absolutely nothing in return. We've never asked for anything. It's always a one-way street. Now they want us to help them with Ukraine. And let me say, we're going to. I'm really helping, not even them. I want to see, last week, if you saw, it was 10,000 soldiers, but last month it was 31,000 soldiers died. 31,000. That's this room times, the number of people in this room times 30. Think of it. 30,000 soldiers died in 1 month. The month before it was 27,000. The month before that it was 28,000. The month before that it was 25,000. It's a bloodbath over there. And that's what I want to stop. It doesn't help the United States, but these are souls. These are young people. Look like you, look like some of you right in the front row. They go to war. Their parents are so proud. Oh, there he goes, comes back. 2 weeks later, they get a call. Your son's head's been blown off. I want to stop it. It's a horrible war. It's the worst since World War II. They keep going. They'll exceed World War II. The numbers are staggering, how many people they've lost. They don't want to talk about it. Ukraine and Russia lost just tremendous amounts. And I'm dealing with President Putin, and he wants to make a deal, I believe. I'm dealing with President Zelensky, and I think he wants to make a deal. I'm meeting him today. He might be in the audience right now. But they got to get that war stopped because too many people are dying, needlessly dying. Too many souls are being lost. It's the only reason I'm interested in doing it. But in doing it, I'm helping Europe. I'm helping NATO. And I've until the last few days when I told them about Iceland, they loved me. They called me daddy, right, last time. A very smart man said, he's our daddy. He's running it. I was like running it. I went from running it to being a terrible human being. But now what I'm asking for is a piece of ice, cold and poorly located, that can play a vital role in world peace and world protection. It's a very small ask compared to what we have given them for many, many decades. But the problem with NATO is that we'll be there for them 100%. But I'm not sure that they'd be there for us. If we gave them the call, gentlemen, we are being attacked. We're under attack by such and such a nation. I know them all very well. I'm not sure that they'd be there. I know we'd be there for them. I don't know that they'd be there for us. So with all of the money we expend, with all of the blood, sweat, and tears, I don't know that they'd be there for us. They're not there for us on Iceland, that I can tell you. I mean, our stock market took the first dip yesterday because of Iceland. So Iceland's already cost us a lot of money. But that dip is peanuts compared to what it's gone up. And we have an unbelievable future in that stock. That stock market is going to be doubled. We're going to hit 50,000, and that stock market's going to double in a relatively short period of time because of everything that's happening. But this is a good example. After giving NATO and European nations trillions and trillions of dollars in defense, they buy our weapons. We make the greatest weapons in the world, but now we're going to make them faster, much faster. You saw that. I put a cap on the salaries. Then I put no buybacks, no stock buybacks, no various other things that they were doing. I mean, they were making $50 million, but it would take them 3 years to give you a Patriot missile. I said, that's not good. My chauffeur can do a better job than that, and he makes slightly less than 50. They make big salaries. If they're going to make those big salaries, they're going to have to produce a lot faster. The good news is we have the greatest equipment in the world. Now we're going to start making it a lot faster. They're going to build additional plants. And all of the money that goes into stock buybacks is going to go into building plants. We're not allowing stock buybacks by defense companies any longer. They're going to build new plants to make Tomahawks, Patriots. We have the best equipment, F-35s, F-47, the new one just coming out. They say it's the most devastating plane, fighter jet ever. Who knows? They called it 47. If I don't like it, I'm going to take the 47 off it. I wonder why they called it 47. We'll have to think about that. But if I don't like it, I'm going to take that 47 off. But it's supposed to be the stage six. It's supposed to be the first stage six plane, undetectable, like our B-2 bombers were undetectable. They flew right over Iran. They were undetectable. And they did their job, and they got the hell out of there. So we want a piece of ice for world protection, and they won't give it. We've never asked for anything else, and we could have kept that piece of land, and we didn't. So they have a choice. You can say yes, and we will be very appreciative, or you can say no, and we will remember. A strong and secure America means a strong NATO, and that's one reason why I'm working every day to ensure our military is very powerful, our borders are very strong, and above all, our economy is strong because national security requires economic security and economic prosperity, and we have the greatest that we've ever had. Biden and his allies destroyed our economy and gave us perhaps the worst inflation in American history. They say 48 years, I say forever, but I think 48 years is the equivalent to forever. Whether it's 48 years or ever, it's terrible. Costing the typical family $33,000, what they did to this country should never, ever be forgotten. It's early. But he has to be rated as the worst president we've ever had by far. The auto pen did much of the damage. The auto pen, he was the auto pen president. Because I don't believe a sane president would have ever signed the kind of things that he signed. But now grocery prices, energy prices, airfares, mortgage rates, rent, and car payments are all coming down, and they're coming down fast. We inherited a mess. But we've done a hell of a job in 12 months. Under my most favored nation policy for drug prices, the cost of prescription drugs is coming down by up to 90%, depending on the way you calculate. You could also say 5, 6, 7, 800%. There are two ways of figuring that. But we have a favored nation's policy that every president wanted, no president was able to get. I got it, and other nations approved it. And I had to use tariffs in order to get it, because they said, no way. In other words, a pill that costs 10% in London costs $130. Think it costs $10 in London cost $130 in New York or in Los Angeles. And I'd say, boy, that's bad. Friends of mine would say, you know, we go to London, you can buy the stuff for nothing. We go all over the world, we can buy it for nothing. Because basically America was subsidizing every nation in the world because presidents allowed them to get away with it. It became very tough. So when I called up Emmanuel Macron, I watched him yesterday with those beautiful sunglasses. What the hell happened? But I watched him sort of be tough. But he was at $10 for a pill. And I said, Emmanuel, and I have all the big pharmaceutical companies are in total agreement. It wasn't easy, by the way. They're tough, smart. They've been getting away with the scam for a long time. But they gave it up. But they said, you'll never get the countries to approve it. I said, why is that? Because they won't. They always said, we're not paying anymore. Get the rest for the United States. So over the years, they stayed the same. We just went up, up, up. And I mean, we would pay 13, 14, 15 times more than certain countries would. So I said, no, they'll approve it 100%. Sir, you'll never get them to approve it. I said, I guarantee you. But I actually started with Emmanuel, who probably is in the room too. And I like him. I actually like him. Hard to believe, isn't it? And I said, Emmanuel, you're going to have to lift the price of that pill to $20, maybe $30. Think of that. That means it's a doubling of prescription drugs. Might be a tripling, might be a quadrupling. It's not easy. No, 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 Donald, I will not do that. I said, yes, you will, 100%. He said, no, no, no. You're asking me to double. I said, Emmanuel, you've been taking advantage of the United States for 30 years with prescription drugs. You really should do it, and you will do it. I have no doubt. In fact, I am 100% sure you're going to. No, 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 I will not do it. Because, yes, in all fairness to him, he has to double or triple. Because the world being a bigger place than the United States, it's not that you meet in the middle. You just have to go up some, and we come down a lot. They go up a little, we come down a lot. So we're at $130, they're at 10. So they may have to go to 20 or 30. No more than that. I said, Emmanuel, you're going to be doubling or tripling? No, no, no. I said, here's the story, Emmanuel. The answer is you're going to do it fast. And if you don't, I'm putting a 25% tariff on everything that you sell into the United States and a 100% tariff on your wines and champagnes. And that's about 10 times more than what I'm requesting. And you're going to do it. I don't want to go public with it, but you may make me do that. No, no, Donald, I will do it. I will do it. It took me, on average, 3 minutes a country saying the same thing. You will do it. They all said, no, 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 I will not do it. You're asking me to double the cost of prescription. I said, that's right, because you've been screwing us for 30 years. And they said, we will not do it. I said, that's all right. On Monday morning, we're putting a 25, 30, 50. I gave different numbers for different countries. This is also national security we're talking about. Not fair. We're not going to subsidize the whole world. And every one of those countries have agreed to do it. So one of the biggest things that I've done is the fact that we have now most favored nation. We will pay whatever the lowest price is in the entire world. So our drug prices are going to be coming down by staggering 90%. Again, you could say 1,000%, 2,000%. Depends on the way you want to figure it, but we'll go with the way the fake news likes it better because it sounds, can you imagine a 90% reduction sounds much worse? But drug prices are going to be coming down tremendously in all the nations, and I appreciate them doing it, but they did it. In all fairness, without tariffs, I wouldn't have been able to get it done. After declining $3,000 under Biden, real incomes are up in the United States by $2,000, $3,000, and even $5,000 and more. Home ownership has always been a symbol of health and vigor of American society, but that goal fell out of reach for millions and millions of people in the Biden era because interest rates went up so high. Today, I'm taking action to bring back this bedrock of the American dream. In recent years, Wall Street giants and institutional investment firms, many of you are here, many of you are good friends of mine, many of you are supporters. Sorry to do this to you. I'm so sorry. But you've driven up housing prices by purchasing hundreds of thousands of single family homes, and it's been a great investment for them. Often as much as 10% of houses on the market. You know, the crazy thing is a person can't get depreciation on a house, but when a corporation buys it, they get depreciation. Okay, that's something we're going to have to think about, too. I don't know if too many people think about that. You buy a corporation, they buy 500 houses. They buy hundreds of thousands. They buy 500 houses. They can take depreciation. A person sweats and works and buys one house, they can't. But homes are built for people, not for corporations, and America will not become a nation of renters. We're not going to do that. That's why I have signed an executive order banning large institutional investors from buying single-family homes. It's just not fair to the public. They're not able to buy a house. And I'm calling on Congress to pass that ban into permanent law, and I think they will. One of the biggest barriers to saving for a down payment has been surging credit card debt. The profit margin for credit card companies now exceeds 50%, one of the biggest. And they charge Americans interest rates of 28%, 30%, 31%, 32%, whatever happened to usury. So to help our citizens recover from the Biden disaster, all caused by this horrible, just horrible president, I'm asking Congress to cap credit card interest rates at 10% for 1 year. And this will help millions of Americans save for a home. They have no idea they're paying 28%. They go out there a little late in their payment and they end up losing their house. It's terrible. To unleash innovation in savings and financing, I'm also working to ensure America remains the crypto capital of the world. And to that end, last year, I signed the Landmark Genius Act into law. Now Congress is working very hard on crypto market structure legislation, Bitcoin, all of them, which I hope to sign very soon, unlocking new pathways for Americans to reach financial freedom. And I did it for two reasons. Number one, I thought it was politically good, and it was. I got tremendous political support. But more importantly, China wanted that market, too. It's just like they want the AI. And we've got that market, I think, pretty well locked up. If I didn't do it, you know, Biden was totally against it until before the election when they realized that, you know, there were millions of people voting against him over crypto. And all of a sudden they loved it very much, but it was too late. They blew it. But it is politically popular, but it's much more importantly, we have to make it so that China doesn't get the hold of it. And once they have that hold, we're not going to be able to get it back. So I'm honored to have done it. Finally, I've instructed government-backed institutions to purchase up to $200 billion in mortgage bonds to bring down interest rates. And I'll be announcing a new Fed chairman in the not-too-distant future. I think he'll do a very good job. See, I gave away some of it. He did give that away. So we have something, got something. But somebody that's very respected. They're all respected. They're all great. Everyone that I interviewed is great. Everyone could do, I think, a fantastic job. Problem is they change once they get the job. They do. You know, they're saying everything I want to hear. And then they get the job. They're locked in for 6 years. They get the job. And all of a sudden, let's raise rates a little bit. I call them, sir, we'd rather not talk about this. It's amazing how people change once they have the job. It's too bad. Sort of disloyalty, but they got to do what they think is right. We have a terrible chairman right now, Jerome Too Late Powell. He's always too late. And he's very late with interest rates, except before the election, he was just fine for the other side. So we're going to have somebody that's great, and we hope he does the right job. Last week, the average 30-year mortgage rate dropped below 6% for the first time in many years. Another major factor in driving up housing costs was the mass invasion of our borders. And I have to say one thing about housing, because nobody ever says this. I am very protective of people that already own a house, of which we have millions and millions and millions. And because we have had a such a good run. The house values have gone up tremendously. And these people have become wealthy. They weren't wealthy. They become wealthy because of their house. And every time you make it more and more and more affordable for somebody to buy a house cheaply, you're actually hurting the value of those houses, obviously, because the one thing works in tandem with the other. And I don't want to do anything that's going to hurt the value of people that own a house who, for the first time in their lives, are walking around the streets of whatever city they're in, very proud that their house is worth $500,000, $600,000, $700,000. Now, if I want to really crush the housing market, I could do that so fast that people could buy houses, but you would destroy a lot of people that already have houses. In some cases, they've mortgaged their house, and the mortgage would be very low, and all of a sudden, the mortgage, without any changes, becomes very high, and they end up losing the house. I'm not going to hurt, and I speak with Scott, who's doing a fantastic job, and Howard, who's doing a fantastic job, and all of my people. And I always say, look, you know, I can crush the hell out of the market. We can drop interest rates to a level, and that's one thing we do want to do. That's natural. That's good for everybody. You know, the dropping of the interest rates, we should be paying a much lower interest rate than we are. We should be paying the lowest interest rate of any country in the world, because without the United States, you don't have a country. I mean, I had a case with Switzerland. We happened to be in Switzerland. Maybe I'll give you a quick story. But they were paying nothing. They make beautiful watches, great watches, Rolex, all of them. They were paying nothing to the United States when they sent their product in. And we had a $41 billion deficit. $41 billion with this beautiful place. Flew over it. Isn't it nice? So I said, let's put a 30% tariff on them so that we get back some of it, not all of it at all. We still have a deficit, big deficit. We had 40, 41 million. That's a big deficit. And I said, let's put a tariff on. Different tariffs, different places. You're all party to them. In some cases, victims to them. But in the end, it's a fair thing. And most of you realize that. But we put a 30% tariff on Switzerland. And all hell broke loose. They were calling, I mean, like you wouldn't believe. And I know so many people from Switzerland, incredible place, incredible, brilliant place. But I then realized that they're only good because of us. And there's so many other examples. I mean, us, probably other places, but a majority of the money they make is because of us, because we never charged them anything. So they come in, they sell their watches, no tariffs, no nothing. They walk away, they make $41 billion on just us. So I said, no, we can't do that. So I'm going to bring it up. I still would have a deficit pretty substantial, but I brought it up to 30%. And the, I guess, prime minister, I don't think president, I think prime minister called a woman, and she was very repetitive. She said, no, 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 you cannot do that, 30%. You cannot do that. We are a small, small country. I said, yeah, but you have a big, big deficit. You may be small, but you have a bigger deficit than big countries. He said, no, 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 please, you cannot do it. Kept saying the same thing over and over. We are a small country. I said, but you're a big country in terms of... And he just rubbed me the wrong way, I'll be honest with you. And I said, all right, thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Do not do this. Thank you very much, ma'am. And I made it 39%. And then all hell really broke out. And I was paid visits by everybody. Rolex came to see me. They all came to see me. But I realized, and I reduced it, because I don't want to hurt people. I don't want to hurt them. And we brought it down to a, you know, lower level. Doesn't mean it's not going up. But we brought it down to a lower level. But they pay now, Tara. But I realized that we have many places like that where they're making a fortune because of the United States. Without the United States, they wouldn't be making anything. Think of it. Switzerland made $41 billion on us. And as she said, it's a small place. And I realized with that, I don't know, I was so, because she was so aggressive. And I realized in that conversation that the United States is keeping the whole world afloat. Many places, I could give you 6-7 places just in the people in this little area. I know every one of them. They're sort of, they're looking down. They don't want to see me. They don't want to stare me in the eyes. But they're taking advantage of, everybody took advantage of the United States. But I've been very fair, and I gave them a tariff, and it was fine. But I realized that without us, it's not Switzerland anymore. Without us, it's not any of the countries that are represented here. And we want to work with the countries. We want to work with them. We're not looking to destroy them. I could have said 39, 40%. I could have said I want a 70% tariff. Then we make money with Switzerland. But Switzerland would have been probably destroyed, financially destroyed. I don't want to do that. But we should be paying the lowest interest rate of everybody. I hope Scott's listening to this, because we should be paying the lowest interest rate of everybody. Without us, most of the countries don't even work. And then you have the protection factor. Without our military, which is the greatest in the world by far, without our military, you have threats that you wouldn't believe. You don't have threats because of us, and that's because of NATO. One other thing, and I have to say it so importantly, in the old days, and I used to say I'm the youngest in the room. Now I'm among the older, I hate to say it. I don't feel old, but I'm among the older. But I remember not long ago, 20, 25 years ago, when good news came out about, let's say, the United States. The United States had a great quarter. The United States had a great month. All the stocks went up. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Now, when they say the United States had a record quarter, it's unbelievable how well it's doing. All the stocks crash because they say, oh, no, inflation. They're going to raise interest rates. And they do. Some of these stupid people like Powell, they raise interest rates. And what they do is they stop you from being successful. It used to be when we had a great quarter, a great month, great earnings, great anything, any good news, the stock market went up. That's the way it's going to be. We got to do that again, because that's the way it should be. Now, when we have a great month, they want to kill it. Like we did over 5%. People were surprised. We should do 20%. We could do 25%. When we announce good numbers, and the reason is they're so petrified of inflation. And growth doesn't mean inflation. We've had tremendous growth with very low inflation. In fact, growth can fight inflation, proper growth. So we want to get back to the days when we announce great numbers, because we're going to be announcing phenomenal. You know, all these factories that are being built at record, thousands of businesses are being built right now. Remember, $18 trillion is invested. I think the second number is 3. And that was China many years ago. Investments in the country from outside. $18 trillion, nobody's ever seen. And that's money coming in and building things, factories. Thousands of businesses are being built. Thousands. Hundreds of big factories, car plants are moving back to the United States. They're coming in from Canada. They're coming in from Mexico, from Japan. Japan's coming in and building plants here in order to avoid tariffs. They're coming in from China. They're coming in from all over the world. We have more plants being built now, car plants, than we've ever had built, even in the heyday from the 1940s and 50s. And they're bigger. They don't use renovations anymore where they take an old plant, they rip it down, they build a brand new plant, super modern plant. But it's happening at levels that nobody's ever seen. In 2024, the U.S. built less than 2 million new homes, but Biden admitted more than 8 million new migrants. And those days are over. In 2025, for the first time in 50 years, the United States had reverse migration. Boy, that was nice. And these were criminals that were being taken out of our country because they allowed people to come into our country from jails, from gangs, drug dealers, murderers. 11,888 murderers. We've gotten most of them out. And then ICE gets beat up by stupid people from leadership in Minnesota. We actually are helping Minnesota so much, but they don't appreciate it. Most places do. You know, Washington, D.C. is the safest place now in the United States. It was a very dangerous place to walk. And now you can walk with your wife, your kids, right through the middle of the city right now. Washington, D.C. is as safe as it gets. It was one of the most unsafe, I had to admit. We sent in the military, the National Guard. Within 2 months, it was great. Within 3 months, it's like a really great place and a safe place and a beautiful place. It's even been cleaned up. The graffiti's gone. The fences are gone. We don't have to worry about fences anymore. All of the places, the grasses are cut and replaced with new grass in many cases. It's all going to happen in the spring. But Washington and D.C. is beautiful again, and it's safe. New restaurants are opening up. They're all closing. Now you can't get into a restaurant. Restaurants in Washington, D.C. are all opening. Memphis also. Memphis, Tennessee. New Orleans, Louisiana. We were there for 3 weeks. It's cut. We've cut the crime down to by 64% within another month. Well, virtually no crime there. We can do that all over. We're going to help the people in California. We want to have no crime. I know Gavin was here. I used to get along so great with Gavin when I was president. Gavin's a good guy. And we're going to, if he needed it, I would do it in a heartbeat. I'd love to see. We did help them a lot in Los Angeles, a lot with the early in my term when they had some problems. But we would love to do it. I will say this, if I were a Democrat governor or whatever, I would call up Trump. I'd say, come on in, make us look good. Because we're cutting crime down to nothing. And we're taking people out, career criminals, who are only going to do bad things, and we're bringing them back to their countries. But where we've done it, it's been amazing. And we have a capacity to do it at much greater levels. We're cutting illegal aliens off welfare and other government benefits, and I have directed that starting immediately, there will be no more payments to sanctuary cities because they are really just sanctuaries for criminals. They're really protecting criminals. And those are the ones we have to get out of the country. Murderers, drug dealers, the mentally insane. They emptied their mental institutions into the United States. And despite that, we have the lowest crime numbers that we've ever had in the history of the country. Just came out. But equally importantly, we're cracking down on more than $19 billion in fraud that was stolen by Somalian bandits. Can you believe that Somalian? They turned out to be higher IQ than we thought. I always say these are low IQ people. How did they go into Minnesota and steal all that money? And we have, you know, they're pirates. They're good pirates, right? But we shoot them out of the water just like we shoot the drug boats out. They're not pirating too many boats lately, do you notice? When they go out into those boats, they want to take over $1.5 billion tanker loaded up with oil. And they say, we're going to blow up your boat. They have powerful weapons. You hit the side of the boat, you blow the whole thing up. The insurance companies are petrified. So they say, just give them the boat. We'll give them money instead. And I don't do that. We blow them right the hell out of the water. We see them going out. We blow them out of the water. We don't have any pirates so much anymore. If we do, they won't be there long. We've cut down with the hitting of the boats that are loaded up with drugs, including submarines. Can you believe they actually buy small? They call mini subs, very fast. They're meant for drugs. We've knocked out two of them. The Democrats say they were fishing. You have ruined somebody's fishing weekend, I would say. A submarine is not a fishing boat. You don't fish. But we've knocked down drugs by water, the oceans, the sea, by 97.2%. Think of that. And I actually say, who the hell are the 3%? Because I would not want to be piloting one of those boats. We knocked them down, and now we're going to start on land. We're going to knock it all out. The land is the easy part. What we did on sea is incredible. And that's our great military. The situation in Minnesota reminds us that the West cannot mass import foreign cultures which have failed to ever build a successful society of their own. I mean, we're taking people from Somalia, and Somalia is a failed, it's not a nation. Got no government, got no police, got no military, got no nothing. And then we have this fake congressperson who they just reported is worth $30 million. You believe this? Ilhan Omar talking about the Constitution provides me. She comes from a country that's not a country. And she's telling us how to run America. Not going to get away with it much longer, let me tell you. The explosion of prosperity and conclusion and progress that built the West did not come from our tax codes. It ultimately came from our very special culture. This is the precious inheritance that America and Europe have in common. We share it. We share it, but we have to keep it strong. We have to become stronger, more successful, and more prosperous than ever. We have to defend that culture and rediscover the spirit that lifted the West from the depths of the Dark Ages to the pinnacle of human achievement. We live in an incredible, changing period. It's an unbelievable time, but we have to take advantage of the time that we're in. In our hands are technologies that our ancestors could scarcely have. I mean, they couldn't have even dreamt some of the things that we see today. And so rapidly they're produced. I mean, AI, 2 years ago, nobody ever heard of the term, and now everybody's talking about it. And it can have some very good purpose. It could also have some dangerous purpose. And for that, we have to watch out. But some tremendous things are happening because of it. And we're leading by so much. We're doing so well. But opportunities that are bigger and grander than ever before in human history are right before us. It is the pioneers in this room. Many of you in this room are true pioneers. You're two truly brilliant, brilliant people. Just your ability to get a ticket is brilliant because you have about 50 people for every seat. I don't know what. That's Larry. Everything Larry touches turns to gold. He made this very successful. But you're in this room, and some of you are the greatest leaders anywhere in the world. You're the greatest brains anywhere in the world. And the future is unlimited, and to a large part because of you. And we have to protect you, and we have to cherish you. I always say we have to cherish our brilliant people, because there aren't many of them. So together with confidence, boldness, and persistence, let us lift up our people, grow our economies, defend our shared destiny, and build a future for our citizens that is more ambitious, more exciting, more inspiring, and greater than the world has ever seen. We're in a position to do things that nobody else has ever even thought of before. And many of the people in this room are the ones that are doing it. And I want to congratulate you, and I'm with you all the way. You can do things that nobody else can even think about. So I congratulate you on your tremendous success. And the United States is back, bigger, stronger, better than ever before. And I'll see you around. Thank you all very much. Thank you very much.
Guess who that was? It was President Donald J. Trump. If that's what you said, you've won the prize. This is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover here on Times Radio until 4 o'clock. Now, we've been playing Trump bingo during the last hour or so. What have you got, Fee?
Well, let's just have a little game of bingo, see what's on both our cards. He started with everything is great, but parts of Europe are no-go areas, Jane. He's heard things about parts of Europe that are just so awful, he can't bear to retell the stories.
Gosh, well, I've got... Well, first of all, it's just worth saying, if you want to buy a country, it's a really good idea to get the name of it right.
We had Iceland four times.
Yeah, instead of Greenland.
It's Greenland.
It is, as far as we know, it's Greenland that he wants to buy. So I had a green scam, that was quite early on. Mental institutions, they made a comeback quite late in that speech. A Sleepy Joe, a couple of times. Somalian bandits. Unchecked migration. Europe unrecognisable. What else? He got a landslide election victory. Well, he didn't, did he? But anyway, that election in 2020 was rigged. No, it wasn't. And what did? What else did he say about that?
People are going to be prosecuted for it. They are on the verge. Criminality has been involved. The media is terrible. Canada lives because the USA lets it. And the president of Switzerland really rubbed him up the wrong way. She kept on repeating herself. Repeating herself.
Pot calling kettle alert.
And it is worth noting that, you know, there are some incredibly serious issues in the world at the moment. Obviously, there are. And everybody there in Davos was hanging off his every word because the situation over Greenland is imperative at the moment. The discussion of Swiss Rolex watches had a not inconsiderable amount of time in this speech. And people who've got more time on their hands than even Donald Trump appears to have may well break down this speech into its time nuggets, and we can work out where Greenland really lies. He did also describe it as, what was it, cold and poorly located.
But also vital to our interests. Work that one out. Yeah, all we're asking for is a place called Greenland, he said at one point, at least on that occasion, getting the name of the country right. So that's something. The US also apparently plans to build a golden dome on Greenland. So listening, by the way, Andrew Neil will be back tomorrow here on Times Radio. He's in the States. He's in New York. You can hear him at 1 o'clock tomorrow with the Times at one. But we do have Sarah Baxter, don't we? Director of the Marie Colvin Centre for International Reporting, listening alongside us. Sarah, we've had so many messages from listeners this afternoon, all of them entertaining, none of them broadcastable, unfortunately. But what did you think of that?
Okay, so I listened with interest to your bingo card because I had a lot of the same thoughts. Just quickly on the economic miracle that is America. Why is it that Americans themselves aren't feeling it? 61% of people in a CBS poll say it's going in the wrong direction. But you know, his approval ratings are way down. But be that as it may, Trump had a powerful message there to deliver about his own success. It was, and then, of course, he said something very interesting and sit-upable about Greenland, i.e. he was not going to use force, not excessive strength and force anyway. So, of course, that's something to be applauded. You know, there was a huge sort of few in the room, I kind of thought. And yet he was also saying, nice little country, Greenland, or was it Iceland? You know, this piece of ice that he kept calling Iceland. That you've got there, and you know, basically he's saying, I'm going to get it by hook or by crook anyway. And by the end of his ramblings, I mean, I'm very pro-American, but I was beginning to get really offended by his insulting tone to everybody.
Yes.
To all Europeans, to Canadians, to the Swiss, to Emmanuel Macron, to all NATO members, to Mark Rutte, that, you know, he called out, oh, Mark in his room like he was some sort of pet. You know, and it just set my teeth on edge.
Okay. He is vulgar at times, isn't he? He's just vulgar.
Yeah, he's vulgar. He says what he likes. He adopted the tone of a mafia boss, really, saying, you know, we give you everything, you give me nothing. America's now a protection racket. You
right.
pay to pay. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I'm going in strong there, but I actually thought that it started off quite well, even though it was all his usual bombast, exaggerations, half-truths and untruths. It was nonetheless, you know, Trump on quite good form. And by the end of it, he was rambling, insulting and exhausted, I think.
OK, is there any way back for this administration on Greenland? Because he has said in that speech that he wants immediate negotiations and, quotes, the US will remember if it doesn't get Greenland. So they can't back down, can they?
Well, that's what I mean by you've got to pay to play. You know, he acts like America's the only country that's ever done anything for anybody else, that it only ever does anything out of its big-heartedness or weakness or stupidity. I mean, honestly, it's such a sort of inversion of the truth. And I am worried that he is now psychologically committed to Greenland, and this is, you know, acquiring it. And this is a man who told the New York Times in a New Year interview that the only thing he feels constrained by is his own morality. So make of that what you will.
Yes, I guess it depends how, well, how you interpret his own idea of his own morality. We perhaps should revisit some of the highlights from the speech in case people have just tuned in. This is Times Radio, and listeners who've been with us since about 1:45 this afternoon have heard Donald Trump's address to the World Economic Forum in Davos. It's just finished. And during the course of the speech, he said he could use force to take Greenland, but he's not going to. Here's a little clip.
Europe, I'm helping NATO, and I've until the last few days when I told them about Iceland, they loved me. They called me daddy, right, last time. A very smart man said, he's our daddy. He's running it. I was like running it. I went from running it to being a terrible human being. But now what I'm asking for is a piece of ice, cold and poorly located, that can play a vital role in world peace and world protection.
Right. Is he right in saying that actually this idea of America acquiring Greenland isn't new? Indeed, it's been around for quite some time.
I remember when I was deputy editor of the Sunday Times dispatching our correspondent, our Washington correspondent, to Greenland because Trump threatened to acquire it in his first presidency. So it's long been on his to-do list. What's more, he is correct that during World War II, Denmark, which fell to the Nazis, was not able to, there was a fear that Greenland would itself become in part of the sort of Nazis, quest for world domination and a path in the Arctic for the Nazis. And therefore, America moved in big time. But the whole point of NATO is that allies work together. And I guess his most insulting bit was where he said, you know, I don't think you'll be there for us. So why will we be there for you? And, yeah. And you know, that's such a terrible interpretation of history. Where, I was the US correspondent when 9/11 happened, and Britain and others were in Europe, including Denmark, were the first to offer help. Yes. So it's just, you know, he doesn't care about that. He doesn't think it matters. But yes, I mean, funnily enough, America does have a case for saying Greenland matters to us and we'd like to run it. You know, so why doesn't he do a sensible deal on it? You know, why does it have to be owned with the Trump name above it, so to speak? You know, call it Trumpland or something. He only believes something truly exists when, you know, it, like the Trump Kennedy Center, or now the, his Trump name above the Nobel Peace Prize offered to the Venezuelan leader, opposition leader. He only accepts it. It really matters if he owns it.
Okay.
And that's the problem.
Sarah, we'll come back to you. That's Sarah Baxter, Director of the Marie Colvin Centre for International Reporting. We're also going to fact check quite a bit of what Donald Trump said, aren't we, in the next hour or so?
Particularly on energy, and we will read out some of your thoughts and comments. They are coming in thick and fast. We're 0333 003 2353. Donald Trump is answering questions at Davos at the moment, so anything else that he says, we'll bring that to you as well.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
It is now 3 o'clock. You're listening to Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio. More from Sarah Baxter on President Trump's speech. We will be fact-checking the president's claims, particularly the use of UK North Sea oil. Could Trump be planning to make Greenland a crypto-utopia? That's a question we're going to ask Chris Stokel-Walker. And then a complete gear change after 3:30. And you're just going to have to make this with us. David Baddiel talks about his cats.
Oh, thank goodness.
It's all after the headlines with Andy Hayes.
Thank you, Fee. Good afternoon. Donald Trump says he wants to begin negotiations immediately about taking over Greenland. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, he said the United States is the only country that can keep the territory secure. He says he wants to take it through diplomacy.
We probably won't get anything unless I decide to use excessive strength and force, where we would be, frankly, unstoppable. But I won't do that. That's probably the biggest statement I made, because people thought I would use force. I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland.
He also said that without the involvement of American troops during World War II, the people of Europe would now be speaking either German or Japanese. He said Europe has been transformed by mass immigration, and that the UK is sitting on huge energy reserves in the North Sea and refuses to use them, resulting in very high prices. Here, Sir Keir Starmer has accused Donald Trump of bringing up the Chagos Islands simply to put pressure on the UK over Greenland. The US president says the UK's plan to hand an important military base to Mauritius and then lease it back is an act of great stupidity. But the prime minister says Trump is playing games.
He deployed those words yesterday for the express purpose of putting pressure on me and Britain in relation to my values and principles on the future of Greenland. Mr. Speaker, He wants me to yield on my position, and I'm not going to do so.
Yeah.
Tory leader Kemi Badenoch says the PM should drop the Chagos deal and spend the money on defence.
The Prime Minister is giving away territory we own and paying £35 billion for the privilege. Why doesn't he just scrap this terrible deal and put the money into our armed forces?
Yeah.
Sir Keir will be hosting the Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen tomorrow. Prince Harry's told the High Court his personal circles are not leaky, as he gives evidence in his legal case against Associated Newspapers. It's been suggested a journalist was picking up gossip from his social circle. He's among seven high-profile claimants who say the publishers of the Daily Mail gathered information unlawfully. The media group denies the allegations. Nigel Farage has apologised after being found to have made 17 breaches of parliamentary standards. The leader of Reform UK failed to declare financial interests within the normal time frame. The amount came to £380,000. And in Jersey, a draft law on assisted dying has passed its first vote. The State Assembly approved the principles of the bill, which would cover terminally ill residents with a life expectancy of 6 months or fewer. Legislators are due to vote on amendments next month. And for a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online, and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Some of your messages are very amusing. Shall we read some that give a bit of balance, Fee?
Well, let's. So shall we just take maybe the first four on the screen in front of us now? Paul says, if you ignore all the usual tropes, the Trump speech was entertaining, often accidentally, and at times inspirational. More than anything, he is a man who believes in his country. I hope Mr. Starmer was listening. Jan says, though, he really doesn't sound well. We need a psychiatrist's view on it. And Charlie says, that's okay, isn't it, to read out?
I think so.
Always got to check with Charlie. I don't mean that. The Jethro Tull song, Locomotive Breath, came to mind during the ramble. Read Donald instead of Charlie in the lyrics. Okay, we will get to that. So many of you, as the speech was actually happening, were just feeling incredibly frustrated at the fact that at such a serious juncture in world times, here was a man who was giving the very best spin on himself in a kind of, I want to please my domestic audience way, and not tackling the very important things that people at Davos want to hear about, Greenland being the most important thing on the agenda today. So that frustration was being felt very much, and quite a few people thought it just simply went on too long, Jane.
Well, yes, that was a view we heard. Let's go back to, we're going to talk, to, by the way, in a moment to somebody who knows all about energy, because there's quite a lot in there about North Sea oil, actually. Sarah Baxter is director of the Marie Colvin Centre for International Reporting, and we were talking to Sarah before the news at three. Can we just go to the fact that Donald Trump did say he was going to leave Greenland out of the speech altogether? But then he realised he had to include some reference, at least, to Greenland. Do you think his team actually seriously intended him not to reference Greenland at all today?
No, but there were two audiences for the speech. One, the domestic one, and I think his aides would have been worried hearing this story of economic miracle that is so at odds with the American people's experience. And you'll see that at the end of his speech, you know, and it did become very long and rambling towards the end. This was at the most low energy point of his speech. He started to talk about the carrots that he would be offering the American people in terms of, you know, sort of trying to make them a nation of homeowners again, bring interest rates down, cheaper credit cards, you know, and that kind of thing, because the American people are very unhappy at the moment with Donald Trump. And they think that he's been spending too much time, you know, whanging on about the Nobel Prize and trying to acquire territory. You know, 80% of the American people don't want Greenland, certainly don't want him to invade Greenland. So instead of concentrating on them, and they thought that America First was concentrating on them and not about me first, concentrating on Donald Trump and his legacy. So I think that's why Greenland was sort of stuck in the middle of what was otherwise a speech very much addressed to a domestic audience as well as a European one and a NATO one, you know, where basically you're saying you're nothing without America. America is the daddy, as Mark Rutte, the leader of NATO, yes, called him.
Yeah, in a grim moment, he might come to regret. We all know that if a woman, any female politician, had made a speech like the one we've just heard, about 10 minutes in, a couple of fellas in white coats would have entered the arena and would have taken her off to be treated for a nervous condition. And yet, we accept this. We accept the fact that this man kept getting the name of the country he wants to buy wrong. Let's have a listen.
We probably won't get anything unless I decide to use excessive strength and force, where we would be, frankly, unstoppable. But I won't do that. That's probably the biggest statement I made, because people thought I would use force. I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force. All the United States is asking for is a place called Greenland.
That's actually not the clip we wanted, but I'm going to, I know Ryan's been super busy this afternoon. Let's hear the one we did want right then. Here it is.
Europe, I'm helping NATO, and I've until the last few days when I told them about Iceland, they loved me. They called me daddy, right, last time. A very smart man said, he's our daddy. He's running it. I was like running it. I went from running it to being a terrible human being. But now what I'm asking for is a piece of ice, cold and poorly located, that can play a vital role in world peace and world protection.
Yes, I mean, it's not desperately reassuring. I don't think anybody from Iceland called him daddy, but I could be wrong. Sarah, help us out. What does that mean?
All right. So Mark Rutte, the NATO General Secretary General, called him daddy. That was a while back. This business of how he went from popular to unpopular, well, he was not perhaps popular, but he was, you know, it was understood, of course, that America has a very, very consequential leading voice in NATO. But of course, it went to unpopular as soon as he started to suggest that America was going to take over a slice of NATO territory, an independent, you know, part of another country's territory. So, of course, he suddenly dropped in popularity there. So why he sort of thinks it's so ridiculous that he should have is beyond me. I guess really this business of, you know, how well is he? I mean, the mere fact, for example, that Air Force One had some electrical failures and had to turn around when it first took off for Europe would have been seen as catastrophic on Biden and somehow, you know, pinned at his feet as an example of incompetence and senility. But Trump got away with that. He gets away with berating everybody. And and by the end of the speech, he was rambling and hoarse. And so people started to ask, you know, is this man truly well? He is going to turn 80 this year. So he's the oldest US president in history. But he does seem to have a sort of, you know, energy level that comes out of this self-inflated vision of himself. And that's the one thing that keeps him unstoppable. And of course, on the subject of Greenland, he said he wouldn't use force. And I think let's take the win on that. That is huge news. But he didn't say he wouldn't use economic force, which, of course, he's already threatened.
Yeah. OK. And none of which is desperately reassuring to the other members of NATO. Right. Thank you very much, Sarah. There's so much more we could talk about. But we've got lots of other good guests to squeeze in. That was Sarah Baxter. Thank you.
Many of you want the fact checking done on some of the stuff that Donald Trump said about this country and in particular our energy policies. He criticised wind farms, saying they cost more to run than the energy they generate is worth. And he said energy bills in the UK are so high because of a refusal to use North Sea oil. Well, let's sift through those claims with Michael Grubb, University College London's Professor of Energy and Climate Change. Right, shall we start with our energy bills being so high because we won't use North Sea oil? What are the facts relating to that?
So there seems to be first mixing up fuels. Household bills are mostly dominated by oil and by gas. I'm doing it now. It's contagious. Gas and electricity. Gas obviously sets the price of your gas and it sets the price largely for your electricity. Bills are high primarily because the UK electricity system and households are unusually dependent on gas. I think that's actually not contested. I mean, that in the sense that in the energy crisis, which, you know, saddled a huge shock and many households still saddled with debt, it was gas prices that drove that. Mm. I don't see how anybody denies that.
Sure. Oil from the North Sea, though, isn't a kind of hypothecated fuel, though, is it, Michael Grubb? I mean, it's not as if you can take something straight from the pipeline of the North Sea and it only comes back to a domestic market.
Sure. So on the North Sea front, first of all, production has been declining for decades. The clue is in the name. It's non-renewable. So when you extract oil, it's not there anymore. And one moves from field to field depleting. So production has been going down of both oil and gas hugely. And the oil companies are very clear. They would only put more effort and investment if they can sell it on the international market at international prices. Why would they invest in what are now not the world's most attractive, or as well as by any stretch, if they're forced to sell at a huge discount to international prices? They won't.
Right.
So it's nothing to do with it.
Okay, so it's really not just in terms of whether or not a licence has been granted.
No. I mean, some of the oil companies would have liked to do a little bit more, but if you look at all of the projections of how much difference would it make if we opened up licences again, it's almost hard to see. It doesn't halt the rate of decline significantly at all.
Can we talk about some of the things away from our domestic energy as well that Donald Trump talked about? He said Venezuela is going to make more money from its oil than it has done in the last 20 years. Does that one sound true to you?
Well, if it were true, you'd think the big oil companies would be rushing in there with enthusiasm. The reason they're not, for the most part, is because Venezuelan oil is more expensive than most. It's not easy basins, most of it. It's very heavy oil, requires a lot of processing. The biggest oil company in the world, US, once Donald Trump's favourite, I believe, Exxon, said they didn't really want to go into Venezuela because they didn't think it would be economic. Then appears Donald Trump said, well, they would, if they weren't going to so do what he wanted them, then he might shut them out of the country they said they don't really want to go into. So it's all a little bit bewildering if you actually work in the energy sector, to be honest. It doesn't make sense.
He also made a claim about wind farms, and he basically said, didn't he, that China wasn't going to invest and hasn't invested enough in wind power at all. Now, China's energy sector and the changes it's trying to make are quite interesting. They're more complex than that, aren't they?
If that's what he said, that's very strange, because China's the biggest investor in renewable energy in the world, and its capacity has been rising sharply for renewables. And China is so big, it's doing more of everything, but it is outstripping the rest of the world in terms of the sheer pace and scale of its investment in clean energy sources. There's no question that. The problem in China now is there's so much wind and solar that it's starting to destroy the economics of coal plants operating on the system, because they just needed less and less. But obviously they're still, you know, the Chinese government doesn't want them to close totally.
It's no surprise that we heard a president, one of his mottos at the last election was drill, baby, drill, turn against other countries' enthusiasm for green energy. But what did you make of the speech in general? Was there anything that was different to that for you?
So, I mean, the general tone of the speech is not entirely new in sort of what he was saying. I mean, he has the view of a last century's energy system and he's going to stick to it. And I think that one thing on the side, he also made comments about the cost of wind energy in the UK, which sounded equally bizarre. I mean, obviously, they're very cheap to run once you've built them. That's the point. The sun and the wind don't cost much. So it's the capital cost the ones involved in. We have just seen the most recent auction at a time when interest rates were higher, supposed to be more expensive, coming in, you know, significantly cheaper than the cost of building and running a new gas plant or a nuclear plant. So, I mean, he's just got his numbers back to front on wind energy in that sense.
Thank you very much. Oops, yes, hello.
No, if you'd want on the global situation. I think it was a real shock at first when he came in. I think the world has now largely discounted it. He's withdrawn from the Paris Agreement, withdrawn from the UN Framework Convention. We know where he wants to take the US energy system. The US system itself is not obliging very much. There's still a lot of renewable investment in the States. But the rest of the world is simply moving on because renewables are looking more and more attractive.
Thank you very much indeed. Those are the thoughts of Michael Grubb. He is University College London's Professor of Energy and Climate Change.
Now, we are going to talk to Chris Stoker-Walker. He's always with us every Wednesday talking tech. And this week, we're really glad we got him on because we want him to discuss exactly what Greenland might be like should the US acquire it. Is it possible that it could be turned into the world's first so-called tech state? That's next. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sales now on. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk.
Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald on Times Radio Breakfast with Visit Scotland. Discover Times Radio's essential weekend briefing, where intelligent conversation meets incisive analysis of all the big stories making the headlines. Exploring the wider news agenda with guests from across politics, business, the arts and more. Chloe Tilley and Callum McDonald on Times Radio Breakfast. Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 with Visit Scotland. Start your story in Scotland with visitscotland.com/winter.
Incredible snorkeling.
Carnival!
Sunrises and sunsets.
Grilled lobster.
Poppycats and kayaking.
Morning swim.
Pina coladas.
Serene spas.
If you love the sound of a Caribbean holiday, then Sandals have every little thing covered. Do it all or do nothing at all. Your perfect holiday is waiting at sandals.co.uk. Sale now on. Atoll protected.
Spire Healthcare gave me my life back.
The care I received was incredible.
Every year, over 1 million patients trust Spire Healthcare. See a leading medical expert privately in as little as 48 hours and get back to what you love sooner.
Spire Healthcare has given me a whole new lease of life.
And now I feel unbreakable again.
The sooner you're better, the better. Search Spire Healthcare today.
They say, go big or go home. But now you can go big at home with the Big Arch on delivery. That's right, the Big Arch is back and it's here to stay. Big Arch, for big McDonald's hunger. Order in the McDonald's app. Serve from 11 a.m. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Upcharges apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability. Price and participation may vary.
Romantic retreats. Luxury beachfront hotels. Expansive family villas with sensational sea views. Not lots of. Just the very best of. Simpson Travel. The magical destinations you love. The personal service you expect. We visit every one of our properties so we can handpick the perfect holiday for you. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
Everything you know and love starts with water. Your dog, your car, your internet. And then there is just the small miracle of keeping us alive. Without drinking water, you wouldn't survive more than 3 days. So let's raise a glass to clean water. It's hard to imagine life without it. Seriously, how is it that 1 million people die every year because they lack access to clean water? That's not just unthinkable, that's wrong. Donate to WaterAid today. Just £2 a month can give life-changing clean water.
Listen to Times Radio at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Right now, the kitchen and bathroom sale is on. There are options to suit every budget and every home. Browse all the kitchen and bathroom sale offers at wix.co.uk.
Everything's computer.
Him again. Yes, Donald Trump has been talking at the World Economic Forum in Davos. If you missed, and you wouldn't have missed a syllable if you had been listening live to Times Radio between about 1:45 to 2. And when did he finish? About 10 to 3.
Yes,
yeah.
He did an hour and a quarter.
Right, it was a whopper of a speech. There will be much analysis in the company of John Pienaar between 4 o'clock and seven here on Times Radio. It is worth saying that Donald Trump did say that he's going to meet President Zelensky today in Davos. So let's hope some progress can be made there. But let's continue to talk about what he said with our tech specialist, journalist Chris Stokel-Walker. There have been some really interesting in-the-weeds articles, Chris, about Greenland possibly becoming, if it is indeed purchased by the USA, some kind of utopian tech state or tech city. But what does that mean?
Yeah, afternoon, Jane. It effectively means that Greenland would forever change and it would become a US outpost. So I know that radio is not a visual medium, but as you hear me talk about this, please imagine my eyebrow raised to the ceiling, at least one of them. There are a bunch of reasons why Donald Trump is interested in this. Greenland has an awful lot of rare earth minerals. Those are the things that are necessary for our AI data centres. There are deposits there that can be exploited, but really it's not just the natural resources. We were talking just before the break about the energy dilemma that is going on here. It's actually about something a little bit more cultural. So there is a movement among individuals that are allied to Donald Trump within the tech world to try and develop what's called Praxis Nation, which is the world's first digital nation. I'm quoting directly from the website here. They want it to be a home for the brave who strive for virtue and wisdom, and their purpose is to restore Western civilization and pursue our ultimate destiny of life among the stars. Now, that's back by a lot of these crypto bros that are very keen on Donald Trump. They gave around about a quarter of $1 billion to the Trump campaign in order to get him re-elected. And I think there is a quid pro quo here. They effectively want to set up a colony, a sort of area, an experimental community, whatever you want to call it, where they have low taxes, low sort of regulation, everything like that.
And what are their laws? Are there any rules here?
There are kind of rules that are very classical in their ideas. So the goal, I think, is innovation at all costs. They are saying that they won't have traditional money. Instead, they will be looking at using crypto in that sort of space. And the goal isn't just to be on this planet. So they want to use Greenland for this, but they want to use that as a stepping stone towards outer space. One of the things that we've heard from people like Elon Musk, who of course goes in and out of the sort of horizon of Donald Trump, is that he wants to go and colonize Mars and build human sort of living spaces there. The idea, I think, is that in this space, Greenland/Praxis, you would be able to develop those sorts of technologies and really use them for a sort of benefit to get further out. Like, as I said, Jane, one huge eyebrow raised on all of this.
Okay. There are some interesting links between some of the individuals involved. So the man who is Trump's choice as ambassador to Denmark is somebody who's very close to Peter Thiel, who's the founder of PayPal, and he's very much a part of this, isn't he?
Yeah, the man called Ken Howery. And you can kind of start to draw together the dots. Sometimes it feels a little bit like you're being very conspiratorial in the discussions here. But with Donald Trump, we're learning rapidly that what he says is what he means. And there is, I think, a pattern coming around here of people like Peter Thiel, Mark Andreessen, as we said, Ken Howery. One of the interesting things is that this Praxis Nation is backed in part by a venture capital firm called Pronomus Capital. That was founded by the grandson of Milton Friedman, the economist, and has an awful lot of backing from Peter Thiel as well. So, this is these kind of Silicon Valley tech bros, and particularly these libertarian ones, looking at what is happening not just around the world and in Europe, where we're seeing kind of a blowback against US tech, but even within certain parts of the US, because, of course, the federal system within the US means that states have rules and regulations that they're able to do themselves. We've seen the Californian Attorney General trying to intervene over the images that Grok was creating in the last week. And I think that they're probably saying, well, we don't really want to have to live within those systems, so why don't we just go somewhere else and try and build a system to our own liking ourselves.
Okay, but this isn't, Trump has not said any of this in public, has he? Certainly didn't today.
No, he hasn't. But one of the things is that he has those people around him who can kind of say these sorts of things for him.
OK. Can we have a brief word on whether or not it's possible, if you want to protest and support the people of Greenland, is it possible to boycott US tech, to just say, right, that's it, I'm getting rid of my iPhone, I'll never watch Netflix again?
Yeah, exceedingly difficult. There are some alternatives, so there are European smartphones, but they tend to be more expensive, a little bit more unwieldy, and we are locked, unfortunately, into the Apple and Google ecosystem. There might be people who are thinking, well, actually, you know, I just don't want to buy an Apple phone, and maybe I don't want to buy a US manufactured Android phone. But even if you went and bought, for instance, a Chinese manufactured phone or a South Korean phone, I have a Samsung, for instance, I'm still locked into the Android ecosystem, which is developed in part by Google, and so therefore you are supporting US firms anyway. There is, I think, an increasing movement towards trying to shun this. So in the short term, I don't think there are alternatives, but in the long term, I think there are, because actually I've been speaking to a lot of people in and around Brussels the last few days who are saying this really is the breakwater point, where we say this is not acceptable, we cannot keep doing this, and so there is action afoot to really try and unwind ourselves from the reliance that we've had on US tech for the last 20 plus years.
Okay, interesting. And just time to squeeze in a reference to the leader of Reform, Nigel Farage, who's in trouble with the parliamentary watchdog because he hadn't declared outside earnings, nearly 400 grand's worth, we should say, in the right time. He'd missed the time frame. And he told the parliamentary watchdog that one of his issues was that he didn't do computers. Now, this is a man who's in the pole position to be our next prime minister. He's 61. Is that a reasonable excuse in 2026?
Not really. We have silver surfers, as they are called, as people of a certain age who still feel comfortable using technology. I would suggest that that's not really a useful excuse. Even if you can't use a computer, there are ways to get around that. One thing that is interesting is we're seeing a move in the tech world at the minute towards different products, including one called Claude Code. So if Nigel Farage is finding it a little bit difficult to use a computer, he can maybe download that and instead try that, because all you do is you put in plain text commands like please sort out my expenses claims and all of this sort of stuff and make sure I am accurately reporting it to Parliament. It does all of the quote-unquote computer stuff that he seems to find so difficult, and actually it's turning out it's pretty good at it.
Right, but you have to download it. I mean, he wouldn't be able to do that, would he? So he'd have to get someone else to do it for him. Well, he is 61, and as I know only too well, that's it's, you know, you're getting a little frail. OK, thank you very much, Chris. Chris Stokel-Walker, he's here with us every single Wednesday explaining the world of tech.
Now, I know that you won't believe me when I say that David Baddiel is on to talk about his cats, but David Baddiel is on after the news headlines, and he is going to talk about his cats. Not just his cats, actually. He's got a premise that the dogs are getting all of the attention, certainly on television, and the cats are just as interesting. So he has done a three-part series for Channel 4 to back up that outrageous claim. We hope you'll be able to stay with us. Let's get the latest news headlines. It's just gone 3:30.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Thank you, Fee. This is Andy Hayes with the update. Donald Trump says he wants to begin negotiations immediately about taking over Greenland. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, he said the United States is the only country that can keep the territory secure. It has lots of energy reserves and climate change is making it easier to navigate by sea. Trump says Greenland could have been occupied during World War II had it not been for the United States.
When Denmark fell to Germany after just 6 hours of fighting and was totally unable to defend either itself or Greenland. So the United States was then compelled, we did it, we felt an obligation to do it, to send our own forces to hold the Greenland territory. And hold it we did, at great cost and expense. They didn't have a chance of getting on it, and they tried. Denmark knows that.
Western countries, including the UK, say the future of Greenland is up to its people and the people of Denmark. A visibly emotional Prince Harry has said the Daily Mail has made his wife's life a misery during a court case against its publisher. The Duke of Sussex has finished giving evidence against Associated Newspapers, which denies claims of unlawful information gathering. And attempts to cheat in driving tests in Britain have jumped by 47% in a year. The Driver and Vehicle Standards Agency recorded more than 2,800 cases in the 12 months to September. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
This is Times Radio.
Something unexpected has arrived in Happy Meal. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Hello Kitty and friends are teaming up for the ultimate collab. Joining your little ones on a fun-fueled adventure. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 2nd of February, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Spire Healthcare gave me my life back.
The care I received was incredible.
Every year, over a million patients trust Spire Healthcare. See a leading medical expert privately in as little as 48 hours and get back to what you love sooner.
Spire Healthcare have given me a whole new lease of life.
And now I feel unbreakable again.
The sooner you are better, the better. Search Spire Healthcare today.
It turns out you can please all of the people, all of the time. Garden games for the kids, a separate cottage for the grandparents, a private chef for that special occasion. Simpson Travel, idyllic Mediterranean holidays that everyone will love. We take care of the details so you can enjoy the moment. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio, hosting an honest conversation about current affairs, well-being, lifestyle, health and wealth. Plus, don't miss Tomorrow's Home, highlighting how you can make your house more energy efficient. The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio. With the UK government's boiler upgrade scheme, you could upgrade your heating with a £7,500 heat pump grant. Visit gov.uk/cleanenergy to check eligibility.
I thought that I'd seen beauty. Then I sailed where icebergs gleam. I thought I'd witnessed nature, but this surpassed my dream. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in Breakfast from 6:30 a.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen sale is now on. Start 2026 with a brand new kitchen. Kitchens start from under £3,000. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
This is Amanda who's weighing in with this. The reason Farage has said he doesn't do computers is he's trying to appeal to reform voters. Now, Amanda, that's your point of view. It's not something we'd have ever said, is it, Fee? Fee's not even prepared.
I didn't say it.
Ron says, my mum's over 90 and she can still attach photos and docs to her emails. She uses a computer every day. Yes, I didn't think it would go down all that well, the news that Nigel Farage, at 61, doesn't do computers, quote. He only wants to be Prime Minister. There's no need for anyone to worry. Now, we've had everything this afternoon and we're going to move on to cats with David Baddiel. Hello,
good.
David.
Hello.
Yeah, well, good. Everyone's thinking that. Good. Because it's been quite a rocky road we've travelled since 2 o'clock, let me tell you. Mm. David is hosting an ambitious three-part documentary series for Channel 4. It's called Catman. Apparently, is it really the very first show on British television
series.
Celebrating cats?
Oh, it's the first series.
Series, okay.
Well, I think Joanna Lumley did a show called Catwoman, but it was a one-part documentary.
Oh, she wasn't
which,
even
being,
trying.
Being Joanna, she was allowed to travel the world. We haven't travelled the world, but we will do in series two, I should imagine, because there are some amazing cats in America and China and God knows where else. But I don't believe there's been a series about cats, no. And wow. My whole premise in this show is ever since television started, There's been TV about dogs. You are both too young, of course, but I remember Barbara Woodhouse, who used to do sort of black and white shows about training dogs. I list just a fraction of the iceberg of dog television at the start of the first show. I don't get through it. And then I point out that the only cat show that I'm aware of that's on regularly is Bagpuss, was Bagpuss, and he's made out of cloth. So it's time for cats, given that 12 million households in the UK have a cat, but no, they're marginalised. It's a marginalised community, well, but it shouldn't be, because they're not a small marginalised community.
The stats don't lie. 24% of British women and 23% of British men are cat owners, we're told. And you are very cat positive. How many cats have you got, Fee?
I've currently got three.
She's got three. You've got, great. I've got, what, just the one? You've got...
three. I did have four until the sad death of Pip, which is charted in show one. Her three children are still alive and well in my house.
Okay, and you go back a long way with cats. So I think your late dad, who you've talked about and who was, I think it's fair to say, a difficult man in a number of ways.
Hugely difficult.
But he did love his cat.
Yes. I said at his funeral, and I'll clean this up for you, that he had three loves in his life: cats, football, and shouting, "Who the effing hell is this now?" every time the phone rang. That was essentially who my dad was. But he really, his only soft side came out around Fomfa, who was our cat. That was his strange name for her, based on her purr. He thought she used to purr by going Fomfa, Fomfa. Okay. And so he used to hold her up a lot and say, "You're all fantastic beast, aren't you, Fomfa? What a great beast you are." And for my dad, that was a love sonnet. And I think me and my brothers learnt there that cats were the site of affection and softness and homeliness, like a home. For me, a house is not a home without a cat.
And you've always had cats?
Yeah, I've always had cats. Even when I was at university, I took in a street cat when I was living in halls of residence. Julius, I'm not sure where he is now.
No, I was going to say.
When you were a younger man and you were very much known for a kind of, a laddish culture.
Say it, Fee. Say it, Fee.
It's so early in the interview.
Being a new
lad. Yeah. Was there a bit of you that was embarrassed to tell people that
you were a cat? No, I'm not embarrassed to tell people anything about myself. And one of the things we talk about in the show is the fact that when I lived with Frank Skinner, which would have been at the height of that particular time, I insisted on having a cat. Now, Frank is not a cat person, and he's on the show as a naysayer. And in this revelatory moment for me, we talk about our cat, Chairman Meow, still the best name for a cat ever, came up together in a brainstorming session, and I'm proud of it that we did that. But he says on the show, you had your cat. I said, what do you mean? It was our cat. We lived together for 6 years. I don't know if he ever fed her, to be honest. But nonetheless, he reveals, because Frank doesn't get it with cats. He says to me at one point, not on the show, I think, but when we were recording, he said, it's a bit like having a vase, meaning they're just decorative. They're not actually which is the living, breathing personality in your house, fur.
He is a cat, though, isn't he? Frank's a cat. You know that very diffident cat,
right?
You know, who just won't quite do what he's told,
right?
But makes you laugh, and you kind of...
Yeah,
sometimes.
But we're all cats, aren't
we? Are we all cats, David?
I think so. We're all types of cats. Well, one of my points in the show is, people have said to me, so, you know, what is it you like about cats? I said, it's very hard to say, because one of my points is every cat is different. I actually don't think that's true about dogs, and I like dogs. Let me be clear, listeners, I like dogs.
I think
they're uniform. I.e. all dogs love all humans, as far as I can make out. I've never met a dog that doesn't seem very happy to see its human or any human. Cats are more complex. Some of them, and I have a cat now, Tiger, loves me, loves all humans, very dog-like. Another one, Zelda, his half-sister, furious, a bit like my dad. furious because she used to have to live in my dad's garden. I gave her to my mum when she was very young. Then my mum died. Then my dad got dementia. Zelda had to live in the garden because the carers had enough on their plate with my dad. And when she came back to us, it wasn't like Long Lost Family. You know, Long Lost Family? It's rare that you see that where there's a lovely reunion where the mum hisses at the daughter and chases her under a cupboard. And it was a bit like that. But she's furious. So fine. You know, I find that interesting that we have one who's incredibly friendly and one who's furious.
Now, in the documentary, one of the documentaries I've seen, Fee's been your top of the class because you've seen all three. You talk about how cat faces are somehow designed to please humans. Can you just expand upon that point?
Well, I mean, it must be the case. One of the things about the show that is sort of hitting an open door, I think, is that the internet has proved something, which is that people like to watch cats on screen. Now, why do we like it so much? It's because there's something incredibly pleasing about... I mean, not many animals' faces, but I would say top of the pleasingness, and even Frank admits this, he doesn't like it, is a cat face. And I think that's because, if you think about, like, cartoons of... Disney cartoons of sort of prettiness. It's big eyes, it's small noses, it's very symmetrical. That's our idea of prettiness. And I say in show two, I mean, Jonathan Ross actually says it, that he says, I don't think there's such a thing as an ugly cat. And I do go and find what is supposed to be the ugliest cat in the world, who is Wilfred Warrior, who has a million followers on Instagram. And we speak to a Spanish waitress who has a tattoo of Wilfred Warrior on her ankle. We zoom between Wilfred Warrior and that person. And that's because even his ugliness is pretty, and that's the thing about cats.
William says, the best name for a cat is Mousy Tongue.
Mousy Tongue?
Mousy Tongue.
Oh, God, just got it.
Yeah.
Took me a while.
Yeah.
Well done, Bill. Bill's in Cyprus.
Yeah, I'm glad we're sticking with the Maoist thing.
Yeah, no, it's appalling, isn't it? Yeah. The people who monetize their pets, I'm always a little bit dubious, and there are some, I mean, maybe they're just cleverer than me, people who make a packet out of their cats.
Yeah, there's a few catfluencers. We do, Channel 4 very keen that we absolutely have some of the catfluencers on there, and to be fair, all those people are really nice. They all really love their cats. They're not, we didn't have anyone on who I felt was just there to, you know, have cats for clicks. They all really love them, and all the cats that we're with who are internet cats, I got the sense, which maybe it's a sense always with cats, that they're really the bosses anyway.
Okay.
Like King Louis, for example, who's in the show, whose parent, the person who hangs out with King Louis and is monetizing King Louis, Kirsty, she is very, very, very much in thrall to King Louis.
Well, was she the lady who, quotes, only works with products that
she believes in
the same values as her?
I think what she says is the attuned with her beliefs. I said, well, what do you believe in? She says, I don't know.
Yeah,
which I really loved that myself. I remember saying, like, in the edit, they didn't have that bit in. I said, can we put that bit back in?
Because
I love that bit.
That made me laugh. Now, look, some cat deniers have been in touch as well.
No.
Yeah, and Martin says, could you ask your guest, David Baddiel, if he thinks it's okay for cats to do their business all over their neighbours' gardens and massacre the local bird population?
Now, it's okay.
Well, that isn't the only one we've had about birds. So, David,
yeah,
make the case, please.
Well, no,
cats.
There's no case. You know, obviously, cats are animals and they do animalistic things. I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think I've never had a dog, but I personally think it's kind of like a difficult thing to follow a person, as it were, a being round and pick up their poo. That's the thing that I think feels to me very complicated, but dog owners are perfectly happy to do that. I'm perfectly happy to put up with the fact that actually my cats all poo in my garden, in a very specific part of my garden, and clear it up, and like, that's nice of them, but I'm not trying to suggest that they are the perfect animals. I'm trying to suggest that they are really, really animals that empathise in ways that many humans don't get, but those who do. Desiree Birch on my show, a brilliant American comedian, lives in Britain, said this thing, which she said, there's the biggest misconception about cats, because we ask everyone that, is that people don't like cats. What they mean is that they haven't spent any time with cats.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm sorry to mention him, because he used to be here, but Matt Chorley, I was just on his show. I'm sorry to mention him, so don't mention him.
No, I can't picture that.
Okay, well, he's a guy, right? And he actively doesn't like cats. And I said to him, have you ever had a cat? Have you ever spent any time? And he said, well, I've seen them. I've been at friends' houses. He hasn't spent any time with cats.
No, he doesn't know what he's missing.
Yeah.
Because
not being at Times Radio anymore.
Well, that's for a start. We miss him a bit, but no, we can't really recall much about him.
That someone's written in to say, what about cats doing this? What about cats doing that? Like, I'm actually a cat. I know, I'm actually the spokesperson for cats.
No, it's lovely. When I let myself in to my house in about, I don't know, an hour and a half's time, sometimes the cat literally comes to greet me at the door. Now, you're right. A cat makes a home.
Yes.
And a home without a cat, I will live and die now with a cat for the rest of my days. Yes.
No, yeah, I can't imagine being without cats. Mm. I did do this slightly weird thing, which is when I first got together with my wife, Morwenna Banks, and we were literally been going out together for about a month, I got her a cat. And I remember standing in her house, which was not, we didn't live together at that point, obviously, and she said, it's lovely, but here you go, have him back, because it's too early for that. But that cat, I was right, because that cat, Monkey, went on to be with us for 20 years and absolutely is part of our homemaking story.
Right, yes, and you'd go along with that, wouldn't you? You love your cats.
I absolutely adore my cats, and I'm with
what
both
have you
of
got?
You. So, well, they're all Hackney Tom cats, and Barbara's a Hackney Girl cat, so they're not pedigree at all.
I've never had a pedigree cat.
Brian and Barbara are apparently from the same mum and dad, but you just couldn't get more different cats.
Brian, Barbara and Tom?
Brian and Barbara and Cool Cat, but I heard
The Good Life somehow.
Hackney Tomcat. They're mongrels.
Right. Yeah, okay.
I'm so sorry. This is like Cat's Cradle. We're showing our age a little bit there with a Good Life reference, but anyway, carry on.
Yeah.
No, they're all gorgeous, and they do have completely different personalities, and I agree with you both. People who don't know cats think that they're all the same, but they're not, and actually, I've got dogs as well. I think the cats have more personality. I apologise to the dog if she's...
No, that's... because one of the things is, and even I wasn't sure about this, is like, what will cats do on a TV show? And then what you realise is there's a lot to say about cats. There's a lot of cat owners want to talk about their cats. And then also, and this is slightly the internet's doing, but I think it's a good thing, which is very unusual for saying anything, is that they've proved that cats will do many more things than just sleep, eat and judge us. Right? They actually, I go paddleboarding with a cat, which clearly enjoys it. Like, I wouldn't
Bongo.
Be doing it. Bongo. I go paddleboarding. I walk up a mountain with a cat.
Well, hang on, that's Jasper.
Yeah, that's Jasper, yes.
Prime Ben Nevis. I really want to talk about cats on leads.
You don't like it?
Well, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you that none of my cats, I think, would like that. But I went walking with Jasper, and unquestionably Marley, who's a lovely, lovely person and really, really relates to the cat.
She was a student, wasn't she?
She's a student, yeah. But actually, she talks in show three, which a lot of people talk about various mental health issues she has that she feels are eased by the cat. She's got a brilliant relationship with the cat. I mean, you know, I don't claim to be an expert, but I have spent a lot of time around cats, and I know when a cat is distressed, that cat was not at all distressed and was really enjoying walking. And other cats might not.
No, how early must you start training a cat to go out on a lead?
Well, she has another cat, and she says the other cat is not so keen. So obviously she would have taken them out, become aware that the cat didn't enjoy it, and decide, no, Jasper enjoys it and the other cat doesn't. So I think you have to be alive to the cat's needs and decide whether or not the cat is comfortable with it. I mean, since I've been doing the show, actually while I was doing the show, people suddenly started talking to me about cats, and I met a bloke on the train who said, oh, you're doing that cat thing. And he had a rucksack with an incredibly beautiful Persian kitten in it, and it was a transparent rucksack. And some people don't like them, right? But, you know, I just, when I need to take my cats anywhere, I put them in a box. So I don't see what's the difference with having a rucksack. And I have to say, that cat was totally happy.
I really, really loved the bit about the feline equivalent of the kennel club when you went to a cat show.
Yes.
Now, I did not know that there was a kind of kennel club for cats, and it has the brilliant name of the Governing Council of the Cat Fancy.
Yeah.
And I'll just say that again, because I just love saying the Governing Council
of the Cat Fancy. And, you know, it's had that name since about 1847 when it was established. The Governing Council of the Cat Fancy. Yes, it sounds like a weird cake.
Can we just take on Robert, who says, two middle-aged self-confessed cat ladies talking about cats.
Is that you two?
Yeah, but just to...
Yeah, okay,
so... just put Robert in his place, please?
Yeah, well, so one of the things we also do discuss is that I can't bear the whole cat ladies thing. I mean, I don't know whether you have children or not, but who cares? Like,
we've both been blessed with kitties as well as animals.
But the idea that there's something negative about hanging out with cats, I won't have that anyway, but there's sort of misogyny, like a bloke on his own with a cat, which I was, by the way, some years with various cats, is like not accused of like being whatever. Exactly. The idea of sort of somehow failure or barrel, whatever.
Thank you, sister.
So it's misogynistic, but also it's cat phobic. It's together. Like, it underestimates how great it is to be with cats. Exactly. Sometimes better than kids.
Yeah, witches always had cats, didn't they? You see,
because witches didn't really exist. That's the thing. Oh, you think they did?
Right, thank you, David.
Sorry,
you don't know what I'm doing tonight. I want to know more about the Governing Council of the Cat Fancy, because it seems a preposterously pompous title.
Yeah, you're
telling us a little bit about the history of that body.
I'm going to.
Well, you were mentioning it's actually had that title for quite some time.
Yeah, but that's about all I know about it.
Okay.
Apart from having gone to its show,
I
did go to its show.
They are very, very serious, these cat shows.
Yeah, well, so Susan Morland, who is a breeder and shower of Bengals and Toygers. I never had a pedigree cat, never really seen the need, personally, because the thing is, as I say in the show, I think all cats are beautiful, all cats are perfect, so why set up a weird hierarchy?
Mm.
But I go along to this show, people are very nice, the cats are fantastic. But it's mad. It's mad because of the over-categorisation of cats. I was there for a whole day and I still didn't understand how you won anything.
No, I couldn't work it out. You had to be neutered and then some didn't have to be. And...
Yeah, it's like best female neutered furry fluff number 27. I mean, the number of different ways you could win. I'm surprised. Maybe it's just one of those quite nice things, like when you go to a kid's party and everyone gets a prize.
Right.
Maybe it's like that.
It is like one of
there
those.
There are a lot of rosettes involved. Is the cash on offer as well?
Oh, I don't know, actually. Maybe there is cash, but there's certainly rosettes. Maybe you could sell the rosettes and get a lot of cats.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite exciting. I'm not going to give away what happens, but Lucy, who is Susan's Toyga, Toyga is a Bengal crossed with a domestic cat, has won the Governing Council of the Cat Fancy's overall Best Cat in Show prize 2 years running when we go to the third one.
Yes, and well, we'll leave a bit of jeopardy there.
Yeah.
But I couldn't quite see why that cat was award-winning.
No, neither could I.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
No, that's
no
really,
idea.
Right. Charlie says a bloke on his own with a cat is a Bond villain. You see, good point.
No, wrong, though. Wrong, though. Yes, in one or two Bond films, Ernst Stavro Blofeld has a cat. It's very interesting about the stereotyping there, because I think that's meant to show that he's a villain and that he's a bit camp, whereas James Bond, we assume, would have a dog, right? We assume because James Bond. And all that notion, I wrote an article about this for The Sun, and we talk about it in the show, that, like, cats are sort of female and feminine and therefore a bit slinky and whatever, mysterious, and a dog is stoic and loyal and simple, like a man. It's all a nonsense binary, right?
Yeah.
Is that? And James Bond, which is not, I think, certainly in the 60s, challenging any stereotypes. It's just going along with that.
Yes, I think you're right about Bond. I don't think the Beckhams have been in the news this week. She said shoehorning in a topical reference.
Good.
And I don't think they've got pets.
Actually, do they have pets?
I
mean,
think
considering how Instagrammable they always want to be, and cats are a big thing on the internet, you would have thought they would find... Actually, no, I went to look, I haven't done this before, at Brooklyn Beckham's Instagram, mainly cooking, but at one point he kisses two very, very poodly pedigree white dogs. So presumably they're not cat people. I mainly want to mention, because I am proud of it, a pun I did on the internet, which was after I discovered that part of the problem, apparently, is that Victoria had danced in a slightly inappropriate way.
Allegedly
danced in an appropriate or inappropriate way at Brooklyn's wedding. I said, it's all very Oedipus Bex.
Yes, that's good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's well worth a wider audience. you've already told us that, that these shows have done well, and because you've been scheduled up against Traitors, so not the easiest at the moment.
No, it's the final next week.
Right.
We're up against the final. That's good.
But it is all, it's on all four as well, isn't
it? Yeah, no, it's on all four. It's on streaming.
Yeah.
It actually did pretty well. I mean, you know, Traitors changed its slot from 9 o'clock to 8 o'clock, which is where we are. And there was massive wailing and despair over at Channel 4 scheduling, and indeed in my house, not just the cats. but, you know, we're at the moment, it got quite a big rating for a new show about a subject that isn't normally on television, and now on streaming it's doing brilliantly.
Well, I'm not surprised, because it's incredibly entertaining and the world is a grim old place.
Yes.
Is there going to be another series?
Well, I really hope so, because... we didn't get a lot of money to shoot this one. I want to get enough money to go abroad and see some of the amazing cats. I personally am obsessed with a cat in China called Guandang, who is a very fat cat with an immensely sad face with 2 million followers. And I've always just loved Guandang. There's cats all over the place I want to see. There's islands of cats in Greece that I'd like to go to. And then there's just things I wasn't aware of. Just while I was waiting to come on to your lovely show, I got sent someone... it was on the internet, who cleans her tongue with a fake cat tongue. She puts it on her own tongue and she cleans her cat like she's the cat mom with a fake rough cat tongue, and I'm very happy to do that for Catman Series 2.
I want to see that, I think. So extreme cat stuff with David Baddiel in Series 2, but Series 1 is well worth a watch. It's on Channel 4, and all four, David, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It's called Catman. This is Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Start your day with Times Radio's essential morning briefing. With intelligent conversation and incisive analysis from some of the most respected names in politics, culture and entertainment. Hear well-informed opinion and quality journalism on all the big stories making the headlines. Times Radio Breakfast, tomorrow morning from 6, with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
Listen to Times Radio on your smart speaker. Just say, play Times Radio.
Romantic retreats. Luxury beachfront hotels, expansive family villas with sensational sea views. Not lots of, just the very best of. Simpson Travel, the magical destinations you love, the personal service you expect. We visit every one of our properties so we can handpick the perfect holiday for you. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Something unexpected has arrived in Happy Meal. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Hello Kitty and friends are teaming up for the ultimate collab. Joining your little ones on a fun-fueled adventure. Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 2nd of February, from 11 a.m, includes one pre-selected book or toy, while stocks last.
Those who are curious feel an urge to travel, to explore the world. At Viking, we create voyages for the thinking person, because travel enriches the mind and connects cultures in meaningful ways. With small, modern, all-veranda ocean ships that were designed to bring you closer to the destination, discover the world's iconic cities and quaint villages. Exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
The Ford Kuga plug-in hybrid. Stylish, bold, and built for adventure. And now, you could win one. Take a test drive in any Ford Kuga to enter and be in with a chance of winning the Kuga plug-in hybrid. Search Win a Ford Kuga and book online. To enter, take a test drive between the 1st of January and the 28th of February. Ready, set, Ford. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Let Wix install your new kitchen. Choose from a wide range of kitchens and add the option of installation to your order. For complete peace of mind, all installations include a 2-year workmanship guarantee. Get started by booking a free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Stephen says, I can't believe you had David Baddiel on for so long talking about cats. You should have heard who we had on between about 10 to 2 and about... He was really incredible. And there'll be more on the Trump speech with John Pienaar between 4 and 7 today. Yeah.
And for the gentlemen amongst you, and it has been gentlemen this afternoon, who have rather inferred that cat ladies are still a thing in the world, you'll be delighted to know that tomorrow we're talking to Carol Vorderman, and that will be about the path of midlife for women. So we've got cats, we've got estrogen, we've got the menopause coming up. Lads, you're going to be delighted.
Well, I think the lads better go to the shops tomorrow afternoon, because they won't want to hear that, will they? No, she's great, Carol. So Carol Vorderman with us tomorrow.
I'm looking
afternoon.
Forward to it, yes.
Okay, well, that's it from us. Hannah Quinn was our producer today, and our technical operator was Ryan Boyden. And John Pienaar is making his way into the studio now, and he will have plenty to delight you between 4 and 7. Have a very good night.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar, and this is Times Radio Drive. Here are the headlines. Speaking in Davos, Donald Trump says he wants to start negotiations about taking over Greenland immediately. And Prince Harry says the Daily Mail has made his wife's life a misery during a court case against its publisher. Now, coming up, former State Department official Karin von Hippel is going to be joining me very soon for analysis of Donald Trump's speech and what it all means. And some reaction from the former Prime Minister of Ukraine, from a Greenlandic politician, and from the Oxford historian Peter Frankopan, who's a former Deputy Secretary of NATO, and much, much more. Stay with us.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Andy Hayes.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon.
Donald Trump says he wants to begin negotiations immediately about taking over Greenland. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, he said the US is the only country that can keep the territory secure. It has lots of energy reserves and climate change is making it easier to navigate by sea. Trump says Greenland could have been occupied during World War II had it not been for the United States.
We literally set up bases on Greenland for Denmark. We fought for Denmark. We weren't fighting for anyone else. We were fighting to save it for Denmark. Big, beautiful piece of ice. It's hard to call it land. It's a big piece of ice. But we saved Greenland and successfully prevented our enemies from gaining a foothold in our hemisphere. So we did it for ourselves also.
Trump also took a swipe at Britain's energy policy.
The United Kingdom produces just one-third of the total energy from all sources that it did in 1999. Think of that, one-third. And they're sitting on top of the North Sea, one of the greatest reserves anywhere in the world, but they don't use it. And that's one reason why their energy has reached catastrophically low levels with equally high prices.
Here, the Prime Minister's told MPs he will not yield to pressure from Trump over Greenland. The US President is threatening to impose tariffs on nations that disagree with him. Sir Starmer says the President's comments yesterday, in which he criticised the deal to give away the Chagos Islands, were actually about Greenland. The PM says he won't budge on this.
I've had many international calls in recent days, and the Prime Minister of Denmark is coming to the United Kingdom tomorrow for bilateral talks. But I do want to be clear with the House. I will not yield, Britain will not yield, on our principles and values about the future of Greenland under threats of tariffs. And that is my clear position.
A visibly emotional Prince Harry has said the Daily Mail has made his wife's life a misery during a court case against its publisher. The Duke of Sussex has finished giving evidence against Associated Newspapers, which denies claims of unlawful information gathering. Documents show that South East Water was warned at least four times by regulators to address the risks of shortages in areas where thousands of properties were recently left without water. Problems with reoccurring interruptions were flagged in a letter from Ofwat in June 2020. Rachel Reeves says she'll announce support for pubs struggling with high business rates in the next few days, but relief's not expected to be extended to hotels, restaurants and cafes. And in Jersey, a draft law on assisted dying has passed its first vote. The State Assembly approved the principles of the bill, which would cover terminally ill residents with a life expectancy of 6 months or fewer. Legislators are due to vote on amendments next month. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. Well, there's good news and there's bad news. The good news is that President Trump isn't planning to order a US military invasion of Greenland. And yes, I know the mere idea of invading the territory of a NATO partner seems insane, but he said it. The bad news is that Trump says he's not interested in compromise on his demand to make Greenland part of America. So the rift in NATO has not been fixed. That crisis continues and could well get worse. Today is President Trump's day. A bit like every day in that respect, but even more than most days. Most of the world's political and business leaders and a fair number of the people that they lead and deal with have been hanging on his every word. And as I say, the words that just leapt out of his rather rambling torrent of verbiage to the World Economic Forum in Davos added up to a flat rejection of any compromise on his demand to own Greenland.
All we're asking for is to get Greenland, including right title and ownership, because you need the ownership to defend it.
So, it is some comfort, maybe quite a lot of comfort, that Trump explicitly ruled out the unthinkable, the unimaginable notion of the US military seizing Greenland by force.
People thought I would use force. I don't have to use force. I don't want to use force. I won't use force.
Now, of course, following Trump's words, it's never very easy, partly because, well, the plain objective truth is that it is simply impossible to trust, believe, or truly understand a single word that he says. And that complicates the business of understanding the most powerful man on the planet, when, as now, with every bellicose or threatening word that falls from his lips, veiled or unveiled, markets are wobbling. We are inching closer to an economically catastrophic transatlantic trade war over Greenland. And there are serious questions about the future of the Atlantic Alliance itself. Now, in a moment, we will be listening back, listening hard. We'll be decoding, and we're going to be weighing up the latest state of the markets with David Smith from the Sunday Times. And I'll be taking stock of what is left of relations between America, NATO, Europe and the UK as the Trump plan to grab Greenland under the nose of its sovereign power and NATO ally Denmark unfolds there in Davos and afterwards. Does the president have a plan? We're going to be talking about that too with Corinne von Hippel, the former State Department official who also used to head up the Royal United Services Institute. Are you worried about where we are now? Do you think it will somehow work out in the end and everyone will be happy, as President Trump suggested last night? Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times. Share your thoughts or a tweet to @TimesRadio. So let's just have a look at where we are. As well as celebrating his first year in office, Greenland and the North Atlantic Alliance were front and centre in that Davos speech by the president.
We pay for NATO, and we paid for many years until I came along. We paid for, in my opinion, 100% of NATO because they weren't paying their bills. And all we're asking for is to get Greenland, including right title and ownership, because you need the ownership to defend it. You can't defend it on a lease. Number one, legally, it's not defensible that way, totally. And number two, psychologically, who the hell wants to defend?
And into the bargain, the president hits out at Denmark over Greenland.
After the war, we gave Greenland back to Denmark. How stupid were we to do that? But we did it. But we gave it back. But how ungrateful are they now? So now our country and the world face much greater risks than it did ever before because of missiles, because of nuclear, because of weapons of warfare that I can't even talk about.
Well, quite a speech. Let's now welcome Corinne von Hippel, the former State Department official who used to be at the top of the Royal United Services Institute. Corinne, welcome back.
Exhausting day, eh?
It was exhausting, and it's not over yet. What are your thoughts on where we are now?
Well, I mean, I thought that speech was, as you say, he was rambling. He was trolling everyone, including the Swiss hosts. He was trolling NATO partners. He was critical pretty much of everybody there. And then it was a lot of misinformation, a lot of lies. They